and somebody really wants to demonstrate love as opposed to fear. And so this section is describing, it says at the very beginning that, which should take a lot of pressure off of all of us, was that at the beginning we don't have any of the characteristics, and that we're developing the characteristics. So sometimes I notice that when studying the course, that sometimes people beat themselves up for not already being able to express what it is they're trying to learn how to express, and so they're kind of really hard on themselves. And so I think that's great news to know that I'm hearing about characteristics that I'm developing but don't necessarily have fully expressed right now. So, you know, the main thing is to give yourself a break if you find that some of the stuff that it's talking about you're not able to do. And so I think the first thing we talked about last week was, it was saying that that when you develop trust, that the first thing you go through is a period of undoing, and that it doesn't have to be painful, but it's usually experienced as painful because it looks like things are being taken away. And what we don't understand initially is that the lack of value of it is being understood. And so we may not be at a point where we can change internally, and that if we're not ready to change internally, it says the plan will cause for changes on the external. And when we get to the point that we see all the changes that we go through externally as being helpful, then it says then we're ready to go to the next stage. So if I could sit up here today and say to myself that everything that I've gone through in my life has been helpful to me, and sincerely mean that, then I'm really ready for the next stage in developing trust, that everything that's ever happened externally in my life has been a result of, in most cases, me not being willing to do an internal change. Because if I be honest with myself, most of the time I really get on it when there's something on the outside that puts the pressure on me to really, really get on it. And so what I've learned through the course is that if I'm willing to go ahead and voluntarily take that mental attitude, which is basically the only thing that's trying to get us to do is change our perception, then I don't necessarily have to go through the external thing to get me to come to that same conclusion. So I begin to find out it's a lot easier to change my mind than to keep creating physical circumstances that make me have to change. So if that's indeed the case, then the course is saying, well, why don't you... And this is, like I said, this is the course as it's coming through me. So, I mean, each one of you have your own individual experience of it. So I'm just want to just do that as a disclaimer. But that's all I can do is share how it comes through me. But what I try to do is mostly is just restate what it's saying, but just restate it in a way that it's more conversational and easier to hear. So most of the stuff that I'll be saying is really right there in the page in front of you. But the weird part about the course is that if it can ever be presented to me the way that it's actually presented, which is a conversation, then it becomes a lot easier to hear. But it's a long conversation. it's a serious conversation. This 1,122 pages worth of conversation, but I find that when I look at it that way, it's a lot easier than when I look at it like this is this real serious curriculum that I got to try to figure out intellectually how it's true. Then what I find is that it's saying a lot of simple things, and it says that the way is not hard, it's just very different. So, you know, and all these years of sharing it, that's what I see more and more about the course, is that the biggest challenge of the course is that it's simple. And we are educated to be much more in touch with the more complicated something is, like the more real it is. So the course says we kind of like this, have this resistance against simplicity. And if it's simple, we tend not to want to give it a lot of credit unless it's real, 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 real serious. Like you just take that. It says, okay, first thing you're going to do when you develop trust is you're going to go through a period of undoing. So you're probably going to feel some pain because it's going to look like some things are being taken away from you. But nothing's really being taken away from you. You're just beginning to understand that it's not valuable to you anymore in terms of where you are right now. See, that's not hard to understand. Then it says that we need to be at a point that we can see things in a different light. And it says that we might not be at a point we can change internally. It's like I might not be at a point where I can internally just decide to really forgive or release or to love the way I should. And sometimes I'll have external situations that just make me have to look at it differently than the way I've been looking at it in the past. So if I've had situations in my life that's been external situations that have gotten me to change, it says, well, if you want to go to the next stage, why don't you just do the most simple thing you can do and say, you know, since I experienced it anyway, why don't I just say that that change was helpful? Rather than to spend all my time wishing it had been different or regretting it. It's already happened. It's done. So why can't I empower myself through it by just saying, you know what? Every change I've ever gone through in my life has been helpful. Notice it didn't say every change you've ever gone through in your whole life was pleasant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it said it was helpful. And so I have a tendency to want to think of it helpful and pleasant together. Like, I don't want to say it was helpful unless I can say I feel good about it. And the truth is, it's really helpful. And so then it goes on and said, next you're going to go through a period of sorting out. And this is always somewhat difficult because having learned that the changes in your life are always helpful, you must now decide all things on the basis of whether or not everything in your life increases the helpfulness or hampers it. He says, you're going to find that many, if not most of the things you valued before will merely hinder your ability to transfer what you've learned to new situations as they arise. Perhaps you value what is really valueless, so you will not generalize the lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. So it takes a whole lot of learning to understand that everything you've ever gone through is helpful. He says it's only to the extent to which these things are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded them in this world of illusion. So the word value can apply to nothing else. So if my goal is to have peace and love, which is what the book says it's about, right, then everything that is helpful in terms of me achieving the peace that I want to have in my life is valuable. Everything that does not help me achieve the peace that I want to have in my life isn't. That's another very simple statement, isn't it? That's the truth. It's just very simple. And he says, most of the things I've learned make me not want to apply the truth to every situation. And that's what he means when he says that the transfer value. It's like we rarely apply the same attitude to everybody we meet. We'll rarely apply the same truth to everybody we meet. We tend to pick and choose who we're going to have the same. I love you, I don't like you. I love you, I don't love you. I like you, I don't like you. So I don't apply the truth to everybody I meet. And so that's what the book is saying, that we've learned how to not transfer the truth to everything. So if you help me achieve my goal, you're valuable in terms of my goal, not in terms of you being valuable as a person or individual, but what's helpful is what helps me achieve my goal. My ego used to want to apply it to like saying that somehow you weren't valuable if you didn't help me achieve my goal. You know what I'm saying? See, the difference is, no, you're not valuable in terms of my goal has nothing to do with you not being valuable. So the Course is saying if you want to simplify things, then what you should be calling real is what's really taking you to that place of peace and love and healing that you want to go to. And then what's not helpful is what's not helping me achieve that. And then the way our minds are programmed is that we automatically tend not to put energy into things that we recognize as not being helpful. And we tend to already be programmed to put our energy into things that are helpful. So it really helps me in my discernment process, you know, to go, hey, this is helpful, so I'm going to move in this direction. This isn't very helpful in terms of my goals, so I'm going to move away from it. So the second step is the sorting out. What's helpful? What's not helpful? What thoughts are helpful? What thoughts are not helpful? What's helpful in my life, what's not helpful? And then it says, well, how do I define that? Well, Earl, you're going to define that in terms of what's helping you reach your goal. If it's helping you reach your goal, it's helpful. So sometimes I'll even bring it down to a physical level. Like if someone had walked up to me and said, hey, I want you to go to this restaurant or to go to Racine's at 12 o'clock, would that be helpful in terms of me meeting my goal to be over here to share in the class? No. So what's helpful is what got me over here, which is my car. You see what I'm saying? The level of the body. So that's why I try to do everything. It's helpful if it's moving me toward my goal. It's not. So the Course says, how could decision be hard if you know what you want? That it's really difficult to make decisions if you don't have a goal. And that's why many people have such a hard time with decision. They don't know what they want. If you knew what you want, decision wouldn't be hard because your decision would be what? What's going to help me go toward my goal? That's what I'm going to do. And what's going to move me away from my goal is not what I'm going to do. So over and over again, knowing my goal makes decisions easier. Now, the easiest way to get decisions made is to get to the point that you know that you can hear the Holy Spirit, that you can hear your own higher self. And that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal for me is not for me to make the decisions anyway. The ultimate goal for me is to let the Holy Spirit work through me. That's my ultimate goal. It's fun trying to think I'm in control of it, but I've long since passed the level of consciousness where I really think I'm in control of anything. And that's been really relaxing. You know, that getting, you know what I'm saying? It's like that was one of the biggest breakthroughs I've ever had, was when I realized that my ego that's sitting in this chair absolutely really is not in control of anything. It really doesn't know anything. All this person, all my ego does, my ego body personality, just reacts to what's already happened. That's all we do all day. We just react to what's already happened. And then we decide whether or not we like it or does it call for us to get upset. That's what the average person is doing. You know, it's like, all I know is this is here, and I'm trying to decide how I'm going to deal with it. I'm at my job. I'm trying to decide how I'm going to deal with that. With my children, I'm trying to decide how I'm going to deal with it. So I see that the physical level is really the effect level. By the time it gets physical, it's already happened. So it's just a matter of how am I going to deal with what's already happened. You've already happened. Now, how you're going to deal with the fact that you've already happened is your level of consciousness, which it describes as your level of interpretation, is your level of consciousness. You know, and I think that's a great definition of consciousness. Your level of interpretation of what's going on is your level of consciousness. You know, because one person could be sitting in here and they could be interpreting it as weird. And another person could be interpreted as an opportunity to really remember the truth. But it's the same thing happening in both situations. So my level of interpretation is my level of consciousness. My level of interpretation is that you and I are one. All of us are one. And that it just looks like we're all different. And that we all want the same thing, and we all want to be happy, and we all want love, we all want peace. And that the only way we clash is the different ways we've all decided to go about that goal. And that's what all the clashing is about in the world, is that everybody's clashing on the means. I don't like your method, you don't like my method, I don't agree with your method, you don't agree with my method. So my level of interpretation is that this situation right here, right now, is for my own best interest. My interpretation is that this is healing to be here. My interpretation is that I'm blessed to be here. So my level of consciousness is a level of gratitude. You see what I mean? So if you want to get in touch with your level of consciousness, all you have to do is get in touch with how you're interpreting your experience. And that is your level of consciousness. Do you always see it in terms of fear, or do you see it more in terms of peace? And that, I love that, because then we get a chance to get in touch immediately with where we are. Any comments about those first two paragraphs? Any thoughts about that? Also a little bit, it talks about how the Course is just a reminder that the real issue is, will I remember the truth? Where most people think the issue is, can they understand it? And the truth is not understanding. I need to remember how to turn the light on as the light switch. I don't need to understand how electrical wiring works. I need to remember that if I want to turn the light on, I need to flick the switch. And so when I look at it that way, the Course makes a lot more sense to me. I need to remember that when I first say I want to develop trust, I'm going to go through a period of undoing, and it's going to look like some things are going to be taken away from me, and I might get upset at first because I don't realize that I'm realizing that it's not really valuable, and sometimes I don't change on the inside, so that's why this thing is happening to me on the outside. See, I need to remember that. I need to remember that whatever is going to take me toward what I want, that's helping me. What's moving me away from what I want, that's not helpful. See, it's a remembering. What my ego used to do with the Course, think I had to break it down and analyze it and figure it out. I just need to remember that. And so the Course says, after you go through deciding what's valuable, right, and then you decide what's not valuable, he says the third stage which you must go through could be called a period of relinquishment. And if the period of relinquishment is interpreted as giving up the desirable, then when you have to relinquish, it will engender what? Enormous conflict. He says, few teachers of God escape this distress entirely. However, guess what? There's no point in sorting out the valuable from the valueless unless the next obvious step, which is relinquishing the valueless, is taken. Therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be a period in which the teacher of God, or us, feels called upon to sacrifice our own best interests on behalf of the truth, because we haven't realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. You cannot sacrifice your own best interests on behalf of the truth. The truth is for your own best interests. You know, I used to feel like if I did what the Course was saying, I was going to lose or sacrifice something. Or when I practiced the truth, I was going to have to give up something. So sometimes people associate studying the truth or becoming more spiritual or opening their minds to having to sacrifice, because a lot of us learn, like I did as a good Southern Baptist in the South, that you're going to have to give up something and sacrifice something in order to be with God or in order to be happy. So I learned this, that love is sacrifice, that love is always about sacrificing what you really want or what you like for somebody else. So the Course says one of the hardest things about accepting the ease of the truth is that we have a subconscious belief that we always have to sacrifice something before we can really have what we want. So if I want something as big as God, if I want something as big as total peace, if I want something as big as total truth, then that's going to call for a heck of a sacrifice. So there's a part of us, it says, that feels like it has to sacrifice its own best interest on behalf of the truth, and we don't realize you never sacrifice your own best interest on the side of the truth. You always sacrifice your own best interest on the side of the untruth.
You're just surrendering your ego.
Yeah, you're just surrendering your ego. You're surrendering, and your ego is nothing but everything you've made up about yourself. That's not true. That's what I got to give up. I have to give up all the ideas that I have that I believe that simply aren't true about me. The problem is what I believe is what I see, so therefore I've been perceiving it, so therefore I'm more prone to think it's real because I'm experiencing my beliefs all the time. I am actually living in a world that is a reflection of my belief system. So therefore it seems very real to me, and so it's very difficult for me to give it up because it looks so real, it looks so true. And I have to realize that all I'm experiencing now is the result of the beliefs that I've already accepted as true. And as soon as I accept what is true, that will also be physically manifested, and I physically perceive that too. The scary part is when you're in between the old way and you haven't gotten to the new way yet, and you go through that period of disorientation and confusion because you haven't really totally embraced the truth, but at the same time, I still have some of my toys and trinkets of the illusion that I'm still attached to. And the Course calls that the period of transition. When I'm changing my perception, but I haven't clearly done it yet, and that's when most people drop off the bandwagon, is in that in-between state, because it is disorienting and confusing. When your old self battles your new self, your new direction battling your old direction. So, but he goes on to say, you can learn this only as you actually do give up the valueless. Through giving up the valueless, you learn that where you anticipated grief, you find a happy lightheartedness instead, and where you thought something was asked of you, you find a gift bestowed on you. So, actually, we may be afraid of what we're going to lose if we practice the truth, but what we're going to really find out is we're going to feel a lot lighter, and we're going to feel a lot happier. And where it looked like we thought something was being asked of us, we're going to find that what we really got was a gift. When I let go of my grievances, I get gifts. Every single time I do not respond with attack, I always get a gift. It's almost like now when people do something to upset me, they're just giving me another opportunity to let something really cool happen to me, because my spiritual test is, can I choose for peace in every situation? They just gave me another opportunity to choose for peace. If I choose for peace, I get the benefits of peace, which is some kind of a really cool state of mind or experience. And that happens every time, even though my ego says, give it to them. You know, go off on them. All that regular stuff that you always get. Every time I can breathe, which is what I try to do when I feel my desire to attack come up, is I try to use it to remind me to take a deep breath and just, because usually if I can take a breath, I'll remember something sane, you know. And at the very least, I just won't say anything. And my ego is tripping, especially with the male ego, you know, because you're supposed to like really just go off and, don't let anybody run over you, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what I notice is that if I can stay peaceful, it raises my level of consciousness and it raises my vibration. And so therefore, I'm not on that level, and I don't attract that as much to me anymore because I'm not there. Where if I stay down there and meet that person at that level, all I'm doing is assuring myself of meeting more and more people like that because I'm creating it for myself. So to have the willpower to not attack, that's really being strong. That's the real meaning of being strong, is when you don't react and when you act. And so it's easier for me to do that now that I'm watching the rewards that come. And so that's a gift to me. Because I thought, in a way it looked like the truth was asking me to sacrifice my desire to attack. You know what I'm saying? It's like the truth was asking me to sacrifice my self-righteous anger. Right? That's what I'm going to have to sacrifice in this situation. I used to think of sacrifice in terms of some physical thing, but I understand with the Course that it's always talking about perceptions and states of mind. Even though you could apply everything it says to physical circumstances, and it really works, which is weird, the book is not at all, and I think a lot of times that's what people miss about it, it's only talking about perception. Everything in the book is about the way you see things. And so once I get that it's the way I see things that's creating my emotional response and reaction, then I really know the answer to true peace. I really get that it really is going to come from within, because it really is my interpretation that's determining how I'm feeling. That's the core thing. Any thoughts about that third stage where we let go of things, the period of relinquishment?
I had a hard time with it, giving up, sacrificing. A third time through the book, I realized that it's intelligent here. If it helps you think of it as an exchange, that'll calm you down.
And that's what I was. And that's exactly another way of what I just got to saying. Yeah. If I realize that I'm as a gift is going to be bestowed on me, then it won't engender such conflict. But if I think I'm losing, then it's going to be hard. But if I can see that I'm going to have a gift bestowed, it's like somebody saying, "Would you give me a dollar if I give you five back?" Yeah, we'd take that dollar out so fast it'll make our head spin. As long as we think we're getting something better in return, it's no sacrifice to let go of the dollar. That's why I always say that's why people try to hang on to old relationships. They try to hang on to old relationships because the relationships they have now are not satisfying. If they were in a satisfying relationship now, they wouldn't bid more pan away for an old lover or an old relationship. That's your cue that you're still miserable, that you want to go back to the past. It's something about the now moment that you're not allowing yourself to enjoy. But if I was really letting myself have the love that's available to me right now, one of the oddest things that people ask me a lot of times now is they'll say, "Well, what you been doing?" I'll be with a friend and they might say, "What you been doing the last week?" And I just go blank. Mm-hmm. I literally go blank. Because each one of my days now are so full that I have to let go of yesterday, because today is so fulfilling to me. So when someone says, "What did you do yesterday?" I really have to think about it, or I'm really having short-term memory loss. I need to go to the doctor. So I'm either enlightened or getting Alzheimer's. I don't know. Something's going on. I don't know. What thing is up? You know, it's an extreme example of letting go of the past, you know. Because sometimes I really have to go, what did I do? This? You know, so I'm so glad I keep journals. It kind of helps me keep up with what happened to me. But you know what I'm saying? If you're really in a moment and it's really happy, have you noticed that you're just totally focused on whatever it is that you're experiencing that happiness with? You're not really thinking about anything but enjoying that moment when it's really loving and when it's really happy. So I found that the best way to let go of my grievances and the best way to let go of my past from studying the Course is to just be so totally into the happiness and the joy and the fulfillment that I can have in right now. So as much as I can, I do what I want to do. Because I find that if you have a life where you're free enough to do what you want to do, then it's a lot easier to keep that state of peace and joy going all the time that keeps you in the present moment where your power is located. So really, it's practical to be true to yourself. And it's practical to let yourself really be happy. It's practical to follow your heart. It's not like some little airy-fairy dream ideal thing. It's like that really is the key to letting go of grievances and letting go of the past and letting go of those insecurities and fears, you know. So I encourage, that's why I like to support people in whatever it is they say that they really want to do to express themselves. Because I know the more you're happy doing your thing, then the more love you're going to let come through you, the more light you're going to let come through you. And that's what I want to experience. I want to experience the love. It really is about the love. It took me a long time, you know, to go full circle and get, you know, it was everything they said at the very beginning, that it's really about love. I thought it was about all that other stuff. It's amazing. So much more relaxing. But I didn't know what love was at first. I thought love was specialness. And so I was confused. And so I would always try to have love and end up in a lot of pain. Because that wasn't real love. It was different. It was exclusion and separation and not really wanting that energy to go to all of you equally. But I just wanted to single out one or two people and let them feel it, for that to act right. You know, as long as they act right, you're gonna get my love as long as you act right. Well, see, I learned that's not love. That's not love at all. Yeah, that's manipulation within it. And the course calls it specialness. And I think that's the perfect term for it. It's specialness. You know, and I had to realize there's a difference between specialness and love. They're two different things. And I need to understand the rules of specialness are different from the rules of love. And that's what the book kept trying to get me to see. And my ego hated that. It was like, love is freedom, and love is given equally to all. There's no one excluded from it. Okay, I don't know how to do that. Right? So the Course says what we did was made up our own version of love. Because we can do specialness. I can do singling you out for my attention to the exclusion of everybody else. So he says, those in our separated minds, as the Course would call it, those of us who think we're separate, we made up our own version of love that separate people can do. Separate people can do specialness. So the only problem with specialness is that it's very fragile. Which means that the minute that you don't do the thing that made you special, the specialness is gone. So it is not love. Love you can't lose. When you're loved, you can't lose it. It's permanent. So I got to the point that I had to make a decision in my life. Earl, do you want specialness or do you want love? Part of me said, well, I want both. Okay? All right. If you practice real love, you're going to get both. Because that's going to be reciprocated in such a powerful way from so many people that you will feel special. Because if you're really giving up the love, you're going to receive the love. And there's no way if you're receiving the love that you're not going to feel special. You're going to feel special. But it's coming out of your willingness to love. And so then you don't lose anything. And what's cool about it is that so the love is coming to you from so many different directions that if any one of them decides they're going to snatch it away from you, you still got it coming at you from other ways. So you still receive the love. God, no more they putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm not doing that one no more. Because haven't y'all had that specialness snatched away before in your life? You know, when you give all that energy in just one direction, and that's great. But if something happens and that leaves, then you're totally, completely devastated. Because that's where you were getting all your sense of specialness and value and everything else. You know, so I can fully love you and fully treat you right and fully give you great energy and at the same time have other people that love me. It's going to keep you on your toes, too. You know, even from an ego standpoint, it keeps people on their toes. You know, they know that you could be loved by many people. They don't take you for granted as much.
But if I love someone, they can't take it away from me.
That's exactly right. You know? That's right. If you love someone, there's nothing they can do about it.
Did you ever see the movie Adaptation? Anybody in here?
Mm-hmm.
In that part where there's two twins, and in the end he's talking to his twin, and he says, when you were little, you were so oblivious. And he said, why do you think I was oblivious? He said, you were talking to this girl, and you were telling her how much, you know, you liked her and all this stuff, and when you walked away, she was making fun of you. And he said, well, it doesn't matter what she was doing. I was giving her love, and it was a gift. I was giving her my love, and it's a gift. It's none of my business what she does.
Exactly. That's exactly the way I feel about it, too. I found that it feels so good. It feels so good to let the light through. It feels so good to let the love through. That the feeling that you get when it's coming through you is your reward. And, you know, it's like if this other person give it back. That's like, oh, that's cool. That's icing on the cake. But I've already won just by letting it come through me. Like you said, giving the gift, which is so different from the way it is in the world, is that I'm giving it and I'm really looking for you to give it back to me, or else I'm not going to feel whole and I'm not going to feel complete. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the truth is people use their relationships really to, the other person is supposed to hide the way you feel about yourself from you. For instance, if I'm insecure, then your love is supposed to make me feel like I'm valuable. So it hides my insecurity, because now you love me so much, I must be valuable. I must be secure. So really, you're hiding my insecurity temporarily. Okay? So then as soon as you do something that frightens me, extend to somebody else, go out, talk to somebody, then all of a sudden I feel like insecurity come up. See, now you're not keeping the agreement. Your purpose was to make me think I didn't have any. But what you're doing is making me aware of it. You know, and so then the quote says we become disillusioned. Because now we're becoming aware of something that the person we thought was really supposed to make us think didn't exist, which is my insecurity or my fear or whatever. So more people hide in relationships than reveal in relationships until they get conscious. And when you get conscious, you realize that the purpose of a relationship is to make you conscious. Mm-hmm. That's why you're in a relationship, is that the relationship will make you more conscious of what's going on inside of you. If you have that attitude, it'll be fool all the time. Because it is making me conscious. It's hard to hide. You know, it's hard, especially if that person starts to be themselves and starts to extend. So we are really in a very powerful time of change and transformation right now. I mean, we were born in the most incredible time that you could possibly be born. And the stuff is really, it's really getting intense right now. But there's a lot of decisions for love being made and for happiness and truth being made right now. People are tired. And they're beginning to see through the illusion of the whole game that we're caught up in. So a lot of people think the world is like in worse shape than ever before. I think it's so much love coming into the world that is bringing up everything that's unlike it and making us see just how insane the way we treat each other really is. I think it's just the opposite. I think it's so much love coming that things look crazy. Yeah, that's good. Bring it on. I'm ready for more. So, so the only time the court says that that the period of relinquishment is hard is when you think you're giving up what's desirable. And so if you're going through a conflict right now about giving up something, it's because you still think it's desirable. And it has an answer to that. The answer is this. Keep it. That's going to get to that no more. Next, it's so funny. So the book is so simple. It says, now comes a period of settling down. This is a quiet time in which you rest a while in reasonable peace. Now you consolidate your learning. Now you begin to see the transfer value of what you've learned. In other words, now you begin to see how you can apply what you've learned to every situation. That's what it means by transfer value. Then he says, then the potential of what you've learned is literally staggering. And so you are now at the point in your progress of which you see in it your whole way out, which is what? Give up what you do not want. Keep what you do. Then that gets rid of the conflict. Right? But remember, he said that the conflict came from trying to give up what you wanted. And so the book says, well, that's okay. Why don't you just do this? Keep what you do want to keep. Give up what you do want to give up. If you don't want to give it up, because we're talking about perceptions and thoughts, if you want to keep that thought, keep it until you don't want to keep it. It's just that simple. And the thoughts you're ready to give up, Earl, give them up. Then you won't be in conflict. If you still want to keep that belief until you don't want that belief anymore. If you don't want that belief or perception, let go of it. And I apply it to everything, not just thoughts. If it's something physical or material that I want to keep, I keep it. And when I think it's time for me to give it up, I give it up. When I was a kid, nobody forced me to put down my toy guns. I just realized one day I was no longer interested in toy guns. But there was not a point that somebody came to me and said, okay, this is it. You got to put that down. Did any of you have that? Did you just find that you just lost interest in things as you were growing up? And so as adults, sometimes we forget. That rule still applies, that all that stuff we're trying to force ourselves to give up, we'll naturally lose the desire for it as we begin to realize who we are. As I love myself more, I naturally want to eat better. Yeah, but as I love myself more, I find I naturally want to take care of myself more, just out of the love for myself. It just, a byproduct of that is I just want to do better things for myself. But when I didn't love myself, then I was always trying to force myself to do what was best for me. So I didn't realize the problem was I didn't love myself. It wasn't my discipline about not doing such and such a thing. So as a result of letting the love come through, if you've been trying to stop smoking, for instance, and I don't have a judgment one way or another, because as far as I'm concerned, all of this is an illusion. But if you love yourself, and if that's something that doesn't bring you peace, and now you want peace, then you just won't do it. Because it doesn't bring you peace. Because what would be the point if it's not going to bring me peace? If it's not going to bring me peace, why do it? And all of a sudden, I'm loving myself so much that my peace means to me more to me than anything. So, again, a lot of the things that we're trying to discipline ourselves about, the Course is teaching me that if I have the goal of peace, then it becomes very easy for me to make right choices for myself. But when I put a moral value on it, when I made it bad or good, guilty or innocent, I found I was constantly being drawn back to it over and over again. The things I felt guilty about was the things I was most attracted to. And I didn't realize it was because I was feeling guilty was why I was being drawn back to it over and over again. It's amazing how many things you'll stop doing the once you don't make yourself feel guilty about it. It's almost like the desire for it will drop away. It'll kind of freak you out. Because you think if I didn't feel guilty, I'd do it more and I'd abuse it. It's just the opposite. If you make yourself feel innocent about whatever you're doing, you get to the point really quick where, it's okay if I do it and it's okay if I don't. You lose all of that attachment to it. So the Course says, then, he says, how simple is the obvious? Give up what you don't want, keep what you do. And he says, how easy to do? I mean, what really could be easier than that? Keeping what I do want, letting go of what I don't want. That's true. He says, we need this period of respite. We haven't yet come as far as we think. And when we're ready to go on, we go with mighty companions beside us. Now we rest a while and gather our mighty companions before going on, because we won't go on from here alone. Look around us. It's obvious that now I can go with mighty companions beside me, because I'm looking at mighty companions right now. So I must have already been giving up what I don't want and keeping what I do want. I must have already been discovering what was valuable and what was not valuable, because I ended up in a room full of people who want peace just like I do. And believe me, there's not a lot of people that's doing what we're doing right now in this moment. How did it end up that we was free to be together to join on the idea today? It must be because we've done some kind of subconscious or conscious individual spiritual work on ourselves that developed us to the point that we could be in a room full of people that actually wanted peace with us. That's a major accomplishment. I tell you what, there's a lot of people in this world not experiencing this beautiful day, sitting around talking about love right now. They're dodging bullets and bombs and got bosses breathing over their shoulder and wondering how to, you know what I'm saying? If you can create a situation like this, you must be highly developed. That thrilled all of us, didn't it?
My ego goes, yeah.
That's good. I mean, what's wrong with feeling good about ourselves? What's wrong with feeling like we're actually accomplishing our goal? I think it's great. I think we're having physical evidence that we're accomplishing our goal. So I don't feel like I have to worry about one of you all mugging me. You know what I'm saying? I think we're doing pretty good. You know, you're in a room full of people who wish you well. That says a lot. So any thoughts about that? That particular one, the period of settling down, where you give up what you do want, keep what you don't. Give up what you want, keep, that's the ego. Give up what you don't want, keep what you do. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I think that's one of my favorite chapters. It's interesting because, you know, I've come and gone in the course over the past couple of years with you, and it seems like when I'm here, you're talking about this particular subject a lot when I happen to be here with you. And I just feel that it's so powerful because it just reinforces that idea that we're innocent and we shouldn't judge where we are and what's going on in our lives. And that idea that we only need to give up what we can give up at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are innocent.
Mm-hmm.
We're innocent at every moment. And Dan and I were talking a little bit after the last course we came to with you about... we had listened to Conversations with God a couple of years ago, and he was talking about the idea of the Ten Commandments, that they're not meant to be judgments. They're meant to be things that we move towards when we become ultimately peaceful and ultimately loving.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not something that we shouldn't do this because then we're bad,
mm-hmm.
but that when we become completely at one and completely peaceful, we fall away from those things,
mm-hmm.
and we merge with universal law. So I love that chapter.
I do too. There's some sections. It's like the whole book is like off the hook, but there's some sections that you just can't hear enough, because it's funny how you walk out the room and you forget that, and then you'll be right back into giving yourself enormous conflict about, should I give up this or should I keep this? And you'll forget that just that quick that answer has already been given us. Do you want to give it up? No. Then don't. But I think I should. Yeah, but do you want to? No. Then don't. But I really feel like I do. I should. You know. So we don't realize that what we're getting off on is the conflict of the wanting to give it up. That's a form of self-punishment. Because I'm not letting myself feel peaceful.
Mm-hmm. So I guess for me the issue becomes the period of relinquishment.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a long period. Because that self-talk goes on for a long time.
Yeah, in the period of relinquishment, where is that at? Number what? Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, because as long as I think that it's desirable, I won't want to give it up. And so that's what's making the period be so. But just think about it. Okay, I really don't want to give it up, right? So really, it's so obvious to me now that, okay, if I didn't, and I really don't want to, I'm out of my conflict. And actually, I'm actually now doing what the period of relinquishment is asking me to do. See, I didn't realize that the period of relinquishment, when he says that this is the period of relinquishment, and then up here when it says the period of settling down, to give up what you don't want, keep what you do want, it was hard for me to understand that this material is so loving that part of the period of relinquishment is for me to love myself enough to not give it up if I really don't want to give it up yet.
So it's just to decide.
Yeah, it's just to decide. And so if I make a decision, I'm out of the conflict. See, my conflict is I haven't made a decision. That's after what my conflict is. And that's why I'm going through conflict. But I would say, you know, right now I'm keeping these eyeglasses. Should I get these glasses or should I get these glasses? Well, I'm going to get these glasses in a conflict because I made a decision. And so if I don't want to give it up, I'm not giving it up. You know, and that's why I do everything now. Sometimes it trips people out because, you know, that's where I live my life as much as I can now. It's like, hey, if I like, but I do it physically. Where the Course is talking about perception and consciousness, I apply it to everything. If I don't have to give it up, then I don't give it up until I'm ready to give it up. And then when I'm ready to give it up, do you know I don't ever look back? It's gone. You know, but like she was saying, the key thing is for me to know that I'm innocent if I keep it, and I'm innocent if I let it go. That it does not change who I am as a spiritual being either way it goes. It's what I think about it that's affecting me, and that's what's causing my conflict, is the way I'm thinking about it. Because the thing itself is neutral, just like everything else in the world is neutral.
It's the guilt.
It's the guilt that I'm putting on myself about it that's the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this theory that if a person does anything one time totally in innocence without any guilt whatsoever, then they can let it go, because they would have completely let themselves have the experience of it. I remember I read in this book by what's this guy's name, he was a really big guru for a while other than Oregon, Rajneesh, and he was talking about sexuality, and then he was talking about other things, but he was saying that, you know, that if you ever really, 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 really completely made love one time in the absolute, totally right state of mind or consciousness, you don't need to do it once. That if you ever let yourself experience anything totally and completely, you would only need to do it once, because you would have done it. And then you would go to the next level that's better than that one. So it's not like, it's like a person going, wait a minute now, I don't want to just do it once. As a matter of fact, I haven't even done it once yet, right? So, you know, so I'm not ready. I want lots of practice here, you know. But it's not like that at all. I understood exactly what, it's like when you eat a really good meal and you're full, they can put as much food as they want to on the table. You're not going to pick up another piece of chicken or whatever it is, because you're totally full. So if you're satisfied, then you don't have that feeling of lack and need anymore. It's only when you're not satisfied that you got to keep trying to do something over and over and over and over and over again. And so I'm trying to totally be in any experience that I'm in as completely as I can be in it, to experience it 100%. And to do that, all I have to do is choose not to do what makes me feel guilty. Not that it's guilty, but I know I'm going to make myself feel guilty. And if I'm going to make myself feel guilty, I know I'm going to punish myself. I'm going to order up some kind of drama behind it. So my discipline comes more from not wanting to punish myself it's not that it's wrong. I know I'm going to punish myself if I feel guilty, because guilt is a request for punishment. You know, so that's no. So that's a powerful statement that you're making. Keep it. Keep what you do want. Let go of what you don't want. And if you want to keep on doing it, it's okay to keep on doing it. But the main thing is that you won't go from here alone. I love that statement, because there is a point on the spiritual path where you can't go any further alone. That since it is about joining, at some level we got to join. Now, joining isn't physical. Joining is spiritual and mental, actually, because bodies never join anyway. There's no such thing as two bodies actually joining. Did you know that? They never join. They can get very close, but there's never any really joining happening. If you can disconnect, you was never connected. Really. So really, real joining is an internal thing. It's not an external thing anyway. So it's funny how much we feel guilty about something that's not really happening no way. But it symbolizes so much to us. And that's what the book is saying. We made the body the symbol of reality, the symbol of love, the symbol of what's real. And it's not, you know. So I'm glad that I don't feel as much guilt about the body as I used to. I'm glad I'm beginning to know who I am beyond it. It's so much more relaxing knowing who I am beyond being a man and beyond being separate. It's just a cooler place to be. To be a being is 10 times cooler than to divide myself into gender as my primary identity. It's so limiting. Because then you got a whole host of illusions that go with being a man. You got a whole host of beliefs that go with being a woman. And then we make ourselves feel guilty about not living up to those different beliefs. And then when you realize who you are beyond it, then you can let who you are just function through your physical identity, and then you can enjoy being a man and you can enjoy being a woman, because you're not so attached to that identity so much that now you can really enjoy it. So now I enjoy my male identity, because I know who I am beyond it. But when I thought I was it, then I was crazy. I was totally insane. It was funny. I didn't know I was insane, but I was totally insane. Because I was protecting that identity instead of letting the love that I am come through, you know. So I'm glad to know that I'm more than what I was taught. That's good news. That's good news. Now this next stage is talking about, is covering what you just got to talking about. He says, when you go on from, he says, you will not go on from here alone, right? We've gathered our mighty companions. So it says the next stage is indeed what? A period of unsettling. He says, now you must understand that you didn't really know what was valuable. And you didn't really know what was valueless. All you learned so far was that you don't want what's valueless, and that you do want what's valuable. That's true, isn't it? If we really be honest, we keep saying, I want the truth. I want love. I really want what's valuable. I really want what's real. And the book said, well, if you just really be honest with yourself, you don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about. I really don't know what's really valuable. I don't really know what's really real. I just want it. I really don't know. Do you? I mean, even when we say I want love, do we really know what we're saying when we say I want what's real? What do I really mean by I want what's real? I really don't know. And that's what he says. You get to the point that you realize that you don't know. He said you get to the point you realize that your own sorting out was meaningless in teaching you the difference. He says, because the idea of sacrifice, so central to your own thought system, has made it impossible for you to judge. You thought you learned willingness, right? He says, now you see that you don't know what the willingness is for. I think that's hilarious. It's like I'm really working on having all this willingness, right? But what though? I'm working to get all this willingness, but I don't know what this willingness is for. I'm willing, God. But what is my willingness for? What am I willing for? I just know I'm willing. But I don't know what I'm asking for. Then it goes on to say, and so now you must attain a state that may remain impossible to reach for a long, long time. Which, you know, it says, you must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only for what you really want in every circumstance. Let's take that sentence where it says, he must learn to lay all judgment aside. And then it said, then you see that little comma? And then it has and. I found with the course, that it's a book like a book of synonyms. So you could to lay judgment aside means to ask only for what you really want. Because if I only want these glasses, I'm not judging anymore. I'm judging to decide. So if I keep asking for what I want all the time, I have laid judgment aside. And so all I want is peace. All I want is love. All I want is freedom. All I want is safety. All I want is God. All I want is truth. So I don't go through my day judging. If I walk into a room, I don't have to figure out anything about anybody in that room. I know that if I walk into that room, my only reason to walk into that room is to show you what I am and what you are to me. That's the only thing. I'm here to bring more love into the experience. That's it. That's why I'm here. So when I walk in a situation, I don't have to figure out what my purpose is. I know what my purpose is. I'm going to see if I can bring more love in this situation. And it works anywhere, even around people who are not the least bit interested in metaphysical spiritual truth. I've noticed it works across the board. I don't care where I go. If I consciously take a minute before I walk in that room and say, my purpose for walking in this room is to see how much love and how much peace and how much joy and how much light I can bring into this room, then that's what ends up happening in that room. And I end up experiencing that same thing coming back at me from the people in the room. It's amazing. But it's like I had to really make a decision that that's my purpose, so I didn't have to judge. Because if I'm trying to figure it out, then I'm going to judge the people in the room, and I'm going to go, I kind of like you, I kind of like you, you're kind of weird, I don't know if you're innocent. Because I'm trying to judge what I'm going to do. But if I make up my mind before I walk in the room what I'm going to do, then I just go in the room and do it. It's amazing. It's amazing. I'm having the most incredible experience with this, with the truth now. I'm actually doing it. That's just between us now. I don't tell nobody. I'm actually doing it. I thought analyzing was doing it. And I thought philosophizing about it was doing it. And I thought trying to find out the problems with it was doing it. And it wasn't. You know, I love it. Okay, any questions about that one? We're down to the last one in this part. Isn't that interesting? It says, now you must attain a state that may remain impossible for a long, long time. It says, were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. So by the time you get to the point that you're only asking for what you want in every circumstance, then you've already been totally reinforced all through your learning anyway. So by the time you get to the point that you really want love, you've learned so much that you're ready to really want love. So by the time you get to the point that you're ready to do it, your learning has already been heavily reinforced. And so I've been asking Spirit to send to me people who come to the classes that I do who really reach their limit in some area, that really have reached their limit in some area. Because I find that people who haven't, they're very difficult to share with, because they're still in a defensive posture all the time, because they really want to just defend where they already are. But somebody that's really had it, they're so much more open to getting out of something than somebody who's not really had it, kind of had it. But somebody's going, it's time for change. I've gone through that enough. That's it. I've done it. I got to move on. What you got to say? What? I want to hear it. You know, I'll make my choices about it, but I want to hear it. So I feel like you all have reached y'all's limit in something. I don't know what. You got your own limit, but I bet you that you all have gotten to the point that you've said there must be a better way. There's got to be a better way in some area. So thank you for wanting a better way, you know, because it's easier for me to do this when I can look out and see witnesses like you. It makes me feel like I'm not insane in my desire to have peace in my life. You know, that there are other people that want to go beyond the obvious differences that appears to be between us that I don't want to believe in anymore. We've done different. We don't have to fight for the differences. We look different. We act different. We got different backgrounds. We've done different. Different is done. But it's kind of redundant to try to be different, actually, at this point. You know what I'm saying? We've done different really good. What we haven't done is we're the same. It's our commonality that hasn't been done up. But differences, I think we've done a good job, don't you? Mm-hmm. I think nobody here looks alike. We all got our story, right? And they're interesting stories, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Aren't you tired of your story? Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. It's time for a major rewrite, isn't it? And so the Course says, well, that's good, but just don't you be the one to do the writing. Because what you're going to do when you write is you're going to rewrite the same play again with a little slightly different flavor to it, but it's going to be the exact same story you've been doing all the time, Earl. So we're down to the last one. Ah, and finally, there is a period of achievement. Finally, there is a period of achievement. It is here that learning is consolidated. Now what was seen as merely shadows before become solid gains to be counted on in all emergencies as well as tranquil times. Indeed, the tranquility is their result. So what is tranquility? It's the result of, it's the outcome of honest learning. Now watch it, then there's a comma, right? So you go, well, what is honest learning? Consistency of thought. If I'm an honest learner, I'm consistently doing it. And then it says, well, what is consistent thought? It's full transfer. So if it's consistent, I'm using it in every situation. And if it's honest, it coincides that honesty is consistency. So if I'm consistent, I'm honest. If I'm inconsistent, I'm dishonest. So I love the idea of honesty being consistency. I think that's great. I mean, you need, what you want from me is consistent peace, consistent love. You don't want me to be a person that one minute I walk up and I'm a cooled out, and the next time you see me, I'm going off on you, and the next time you see me, I'm really cooled out, and the next time you see me, I'm going out, off on you. Unless you do that so regularly that you're consistently inconsistent, and then you are honest. Because I don't, you know, and y'all know people like that, right?
Yep.
So in a sense, you know what to expect, right? Which is anything. Right? So it's hard to relax around somebody who might do anything unless you know that what they're doing is rooted in peace and love. Like if you know that no matter what, I'm going to be loving and peaceful and respectful of you, then you can be open to having new experiences with me because you know the content's going to be cool. So now we can have new experiences with each other. So what I want is consistent, of course, it's my consistent thought, consistent content. And so then we could have a variety of experiences, and our life could be really exciting. But as long as I know I'm safe, and you know you're safe with each other no matter what, then that's when we're really open to new experiences. So you can't have an exciting relationship with someone you're afraid of. Because if you're in a relationship, friendship, or otherwise with someone that you're afraid of, it's going to bring up the desire to control and to limit. It comes up naturally. If I'm afraid of you, I'm going to want to limit you and control you. If I feel safe with you, then I might do things around you I wouldn't do around anybody else. I might show you sides of myself that no one else would see. So freedom comes out of safety, and love comes out of safety. So the number one priority, if you want an exciting connection with someone, is to make safety at the center of the relationship. And then once they feel safe, they will start to reveal themselves. And when a person reveals themselves, it's totally exciting. Because the person that's revealing themselves, they're not going to be cookie cutter. They're not going to be acting like everybody else. They're going to be showing you their own unique light that's just theirs, that no one else has ever seen. And that is so thrilling to watch somebody do that. That, you know, whatever they've been afraid to express, which is really their beauty, but they've just been afraid to express it. With you, they'll express it because they feel like they won't be attacked. They feel like they won't be ridiculed. They feel like they won't be looked at as strange. You don't know how many interesting conversations you could be having with people if they were not afraid of how you were going to react to what they said. So when you feel safe, then you start expressing those secret thoughts. And those secret thoughts are the interesting ones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just tell somebody something. Come to somebody and tell, I'm going to tell you one of the deepest secrets I've ever had. They're going to get their attention. Immediately they're going, what is it? You know what I'm saying? You know, people like that. They want to know what's really going on inside of you, you know. And if you feel safe, you will share and you will just feel this bonding that happens. It's this really connection. Because first of all, the thing that I share with you that's a big secret, the ones I share with you and I'm not attacked and I feel innocent, then I forgive myself and I feel real good about myself and I feel peace about myself. And I'm not talking about some secret act of violence or some secret act of attack. I'm talking about something that's very innocent and very wonderful, but you just haven't felt safe to say it or to express it. So people are going to start opening up to you more. When you become really safe, you're going to find that people are going to start confiding in you more. They're going to open up to you more. And the more they open to you, the more you feel safe with them because you know more about what's going on. And even if you are shocked, you know that to show it. You know, just to, you know, breathe and take it in. All right, okay. Because you want to keep them talking. If you attack them, they're going to go back into hiding. And so I share that a lot in relationship seminars. I see that if a person tells you the truth and then you attack them for it, they're going to hide from you. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, do I really want to that person hiding from me, or would it really be better if I really knew what was really happening? So the next time you get ready to attack somebody for being honest with you. Because it's not that they're going to still be the way they are. You just won't know about it. It's not like you're getting mad. You get mad didn't change them at all. What you get mad did was just made them hide. You know, because what you're really doing is reinforcing their justification for hiding in the first place. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, if I'm not sharing with you because I'm afraid I would be attacked, that's why I'm hiding to begin with, then you attack me, then you justified my hiding from you. So now I'll hide from you more, and not only would I hide from you more, I feel better about it. I won't even have as much guilt about it now as I did before. See, which is interesting, you know. So even if someone is saying something to me that's shocking, or that even I feel like it offends me, I still don't attack them, because I want them to stay open and keep letting me know what's going on. Because if I know what's going on, I got a pretty good idea how they're going to express themselves with me. And that's what I want to know, is what's going on. So the next time someone is saying, let me really tell you something, if you can. Now, if you can't and you go off, that's just your opportunity to forgive yourself. That's your call for love. I mean, we're trying. We haven't mastered it, right? So we might not be able to pull it off. But as much as you can, try to not attack someone for being honest with you about whatever they're feeling or thinking, as much as you can. And they'll keep on revealing more and more and more, and then you'll be able to make a really good judgment as to whether or not this is valuable or whether this isn't too valuable to me, you know. I want you to be happy. I want to be happy. Because if you're happy, I'm happy. So the Course says that's the stage of real peace, consistency of thought, full transfer. He says, for here is heaven's state fully reflected. From here, what is here? From a state of tranquility, right? He says, from here, the way to heaven, which the Course describes as perfect joy, is not a place, it's perfect joy. The way to perfect joy is open and easy. In fact, it is here. He says, who would go anywhere if peace of mind is already complete? And who would seek to change tranquility for something more desirable? And what could be more desirable than tranquility and peace of mind? Right. Once I'm told it's satisfied, why would I want to change it? Why would I want to do anything but just experience it, you know? Then everything you do, you're just doing it because you want to do it. You're not doing it because it has any reflection on your value. A lot of people seek out the stuff because they think they're going to feel fulfilled or valuable if they achieve a goal. What if you were already satisfied with yourself and you were pleased with yourself and you felt good about yourself? Then everything you do, you just be doing it just to enjoy yourself and just express yourself. And if it didn't work out, you'd be all right, because it didn't have nothing to do with your value. So that's what I love about coming from that whole place. You don't care about failure. Failure doesn't mean anything to you. It's like, okay, I think I want to try that. I'm going to give it the best shot I got. Well, that worked. That didn't work. Okay, I'm going to go do something else now, because I'm okay. I'm all right either way it go. You know, I'd like to have a relationship, but if I don't have one, I'm okay. I'm cool with me. I don't have a problem hanging out with Earl. You see what I mean? I like that state a lot better than, God, I got to have somebody else. I'm messed up. I got to make $100,000 a year. I'm a failure if I don't have, you know what I'm saying? It's like that whole trip. I'm so glad not to be on that track anymore. And I see so many of my friends and associates still on that track, where they really believe that when they get that next thing out there, then they're really and truly going to be happy. And they don't notice that as soon as you get anything, your ego comes up with another one and another one and another one. But it's different if you go, you know, I'd like to be president of my own company just for the fun of it, just for the expression of it, just to see what that would be like to be in that position of leadership, blah, 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 blah. You see, that's different. Then that's my value from the president of the company. And the guy that looks at it as if they're whole would make a better president. Because it's going to be more open, and not going to be tripping, it just makes the whole thing easier. So that's where we're headed. We're headed to that kind of centeredness and taking that kind of pressure off ourselves. All right. It's 1 o'clock.
You're tired, Earl.
Actually, what happens is it takes... I know. I wear you out now. I tell you so much cool stuff about yourself, you'd be about to die. You know, I will. First of all, I'm going to do the love offering. I appreciate you sharing with me. I teach the Course in Miracles full time. That's all I do in the world. I've done it in the world for about 18 years. And this has been the best adventure that I've ever given myself. I've met some of the most incredible people that's beyond my wildest dreams. I had some of the most incredible circumstances in my life. It's a real exercise in trust. So I've gotten a chance to see that there really is something that's looking out for me. For real. That's so good to know. I can't tell you how good that when you get to the point that you realize, you know, there's something that actually is looking out for me no matter what. That's where real security comes from, thank God. So if you are here, I'd like to get you on my contact list too, if you would like to.